Welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. Welcome to today's podcast. I am interviewing Mike Briarcliff today, and he's actually a social business veteran and a leader of the Software as a Service group on LinkedIn, which I believe has probably got about over 110,000 members now, isn't it, on there?
Yep.
Yeah. So today we're actually talking around cloud. I know cloud is something that you know a lot about from your many years in the industry. And I'm sort of wondering why there is a lack of clarity around the cloud.
Okay, well, one of my favorite quotations that I read and remind myself of quite regularly is that there's no such thing as a cloud, it's just someone else's computer. And to a large degree, that's true. And that's at the root of why there is quite a lack of clarity. In essence, the IT industry, with which I've been associated now for more than four decades, has got a habit of putting titles on things that become convenient and become acceptable when they don't really tell the completeness of what this thing's about, or don't describe the completeness of what this thing's about. And cloud became the term that we all finally settled on and started using it in common parlance. But you know, in recent times, there have been relatively in the last 20 years, let's say, what we today call cloud has had been called utility computing, which was a term of IBM's at the time, as I recall it, and the purpose of saying utility computing was to describe the way in which you buy gas and electricity by plugging in or opening a tap and water as utilities, and that's the way computing would be. And we're in that progress of fulfilling that ambition, really, with what we're today calling cloud. Another term that was in regular use in this last 20 years or so was ASP, application service provision, which is to a large degree what software as a service now is. So cloud's become a word that surrounds quite a few approaches to doing the job of providing computing resource, including key applications, in the same way that you would if you were plugging into an electricity network. There's another term that is probably worth mentioning here, one that I don't think personally fits in well with the others, which is called grid computing. And grid computing and cloud computing often get confused. Unfortunately, I think grid computing has become subsumed in the same word of cloud. But grid computing was all about massing the power of many, many, sometimes hundreds of different computers in order to perform scientific research tasks, for instance. But anyway, there's a lack of clarity because cloud is the simple term, which makes many users believe there actually is a cloud up there somewhere. And even if there are clouds, there are many of them, not one. And effectively, it's the way in which we describe access to compute resource that isn't on your desk or isn't in the back office. It's somewhere else.
Right. Right.
That's the lack of clarity that I tend to point at. I don't mean to say it's bad, because it gives you a chance to explain what it really is.
Yeah.
But that lack of clarity certainly does lead a number of people into misunderstanding what's going on here.
Yes. Certainly the grid computing confuses me, but I understand it a bit better now. Thank you for that. I did read one of your blogs a while back, which explained about the lack of clarity as well. It's a good article, that one. But your most recent blog, I found very interesting. I mean, the figures, the speed of data, you know, how much data is being created. It's absolutely bizarre, really. You know, I mean, I was looking at some of the stats you quoted in there, and you put the velocity, the speed of data every 60 seconds, 204 million emails are sent, 216,000 Instagram posts are uploaded, and 72 hours of footage posted to YouTube, which is, you know, which is just bizarre, every 60 seconds. And carried on a global tide of internet traffic that reaches 50,000 gigabytes per second. I mean, we're in a pretty high-powered sort of space right now. So onto my next question. What are the main challenges businesses face when implementing the cloud, Mike?
Well, the answer to that is the same as it ever was, whether you're implementing cloud or not. The biggest challenge is to figure out what you're going to do and figure out what the business goals are, and then decide what the computing resources are that you need to fulfill those business goals, and then run a project that effectively delivers them. You know, most people who have a failed computing project, it didn't fail because the applications weren't good enough. It didn't fail because the computing resource wasn't good enough. It failed because they didn't plan and they didn't execute the plan. And one of the biggest talent seams that's missing in our industry in total and in business as a whole, in my opinion, is project management. So the main challenge is to get your project management right and involve the project managers who are going to deliver as far as possible in the selection of the technologies that you're going to use. Whether those technologies happen to be in-house, which increasingly so they're not, or whether they happen to be out in cloud environments, or whether they happen to be in some kind of hybrid situation. But that's the key issue. The main challenge is deciding what the plan's going to be and executing the plan. A number of years ago, when I was arbitrating, I was chairman of a non-profit body, and I was arbitrating in some cases between people who had tried to deliver computer systems and people who were complaining that they hadn't been delivered. And the key issue for me in the middle of all that was, this is a partnership between suppliers and user organizations. And when the user doesn't step up to the line, the project fails. No matter how far over that line the supplier reaches, if the user doesn't step up to the line, it's a failed project. So getting that project management right and getting the engagement of the top team in the business and having the business goals supported throughout the organization, those are the challenges.
Yes, I can understand that completely. I mean, it's a lot like the sort of analogy of what's that one when they talk about actually sharpening the axe. You know, you spend what 95% of your time sharpening the axe, and the 5% of the time cutting the tree down. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I always think that hyperactivity in implementing computer systems is normally counterproductive. And planning and considering what the issues are and figuring out where the blocks might be and taking those blocks away for the majority of the time, to my mind, is the right way to go about it.
Yeah, it's a sort of very methodical approach, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So it leads on quite nicely to my next question here. What are the major problems, do you think, with the sheer volume of data being produced these days, Mike?
I think the main problems are related to what tools you're going to manage it with. And again, this needs a lot of research, a lot of thought, a lot of business process analysis. You don't need to pick up every bit of data in the world all the time. You've got to figure out where the sources are that you're going to tap into and how you're going to manage the process of acquiring that data and then doing something with it. So it's really, I mean, this is going to sound like a stuck record. It's all about planning. The actual volume of data being produced, and I'm sure we'll talk about this again later, the key issue here is to get down to the actionable insights within that data. So finding the right analytics tools that are going to help you do that, and having the right business process to support what comes out, they are the major problems, or they're the major challenges, let's put it that way.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, there's such a diversity of data, isn't there? And you know, and also, I mean, it did make me laugh, one of these quotes that you put in your last blog, actually. It did make me smile, because it sort of says, you know, the certainty of data, the veracity, garbage in and garbage out goes the saying. And, you know, international research findings have indicated 84% of global CEOs were concerned about the quality of the data that they base their decision making on. And, you know, that was actually, you know, led on to the next statistic, which came from KPMG and Forbes, where the revenue loss caused by poor decision making is estimated by some industry analysts to be as high as 30%, you know, which is just, it's absolutely huge, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, the term garbage in, garbage out is not a new one. It's been around 50 years. But then the sheer volume and speed at which this big data arrives these days, if that data isn't filtered and cleansed and ratified and certified and handled in a good approach to filtering and so on, then it's just more garbage. You've got to make sure your sources are being cleansed and processed in an orderly way.
Yeah.
But of course, one of the things that people don't always recognize here is that cloud gave rise to all of that, in the sense that, well, for instance, the Internet of Things couldn't really exist if it wasn't for huge amounts of interconnection of devices across the internet. And the Internet of Things, every single node in the Internet of Things, be it a camera, be it a gate lock, be it a sensor of any kind, the Internet of Things is essentially a network of sensors. Every sensor is producing data all the time. So one of the key sources that drives all this data along is the rise in the Internet of Things. The connectivity of all of those devices produces huge amounts of data. So, you know, it's a key factor. And dealing with false positives in the Internet of Things is also pretty important, because we're talking about garbage in, garbage out. You've got to go through and make sure that the data you're receiving is right and relevant. For instance, right now we're talking a heck of a lot in the political and law enforcement sphere about facial recognition. Well, facial recognition is great, but it's not always right, and you've got to find some way of delving into the veracity of that information that's coming down. But if you don't go through that process and simply deal with the unfiltered data, you're going to be processing garbage.
Yes, definitely. And I think also with the spread of fake news, and how that's moving actually now into video, fake video news, we need to be on top of this. I mean, I was reading something that Facebook are actually monitoring fake video, and they're actually creating their own fake video so that they can work out what's fake and what's real. And I think, you know, we need more of that, more of the businesses taking kind of responsibility around that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really very important. A little while ago, I was involved with a company, and I won't be mentioning any names here, but I was involved with a company that was monitoring the activities of online threats, or monitoring the internet for online threats. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was related to children.
Right.
And the sheer volume of what goes through, and the speed at which it goes through the social networks in that context, and in any other threatening situation, is massive. Yeah. And the speed at which you need to be able to analyze it and make sure it's correct, knock out the false positives, and then take some action, those things are huge. those issues are huge.
Very much so. And yeah, I think it's certainly a very cutting edge kind of place that we're in right now with all of these potential threats, but also potential solutions. I mean, if you think about terrorism and how we can actually prevent terrorists from causing a lot of problems at airports, for one example, and how the government, you know, use photo recognition, behavioural video as well, I think. It's quite an impressive sort of situation where we're at, really.
Well, you know, I saw a document only a matter of a couple of weeks ago that detailed the keywords that are being used in online monitoring for security purposes. Mm-hmm. And it's boggling the number of keywords that you wouldn't think were in any way related to threat that are used by some of the global authorities to help to determine whether what they're seeing has the potential to be a threat. And there are several levels of filtering that go on there. And so some of the words are perfectly innocent words in their own right, but when you combine them in a certain way, that leads to some kind of targeting of what's going on, and then all of those analytics take over and some solutions are reached. But the general point here being that the veracity of the data has got to be spot on. Talking about facial recognition, talking about keyword search, talking about artificial intelligence being deployed, simplest fuzzy logic being deployed in determining where these threats are or where these opportunities are. In the same technology that detects a threat can detect an opportunity, a good opportunity. So speed and speed of arrival, or the speed of analysis and the weight of the volume of what's got to be done, they are the big challenges that face pretty well all developers in this field.
Very much so. I mean, I also read the amount, the actual size of the volume of data from what you said in your last blog about the IDC predicting that capture, replicate, and consume will grow from approximately 40 zettabytes of data in 2019 to 175 zettabytes in 2025. And for everyone who doesn't know what, I didn't actually know, I'd forgotten what a zettabyte was, I hate to say it, but one zettabyte equals 1 trillion gigabytes. That's just massive. And then if we think about all these Internet of Things, the sensors that are involved with those, I mean, it's just growing and growing and growing, isn't it, really? So it's quite amazing, actually. So you did mention in this blog that developers struggle to keep up with the sheer speed of data. Why is that?
Well, I've often thought that big data, the term big data, which is another one of those things that was coined and gives the wrong impression, would have been better replaced with or combined with the term fast. Because, and we talked about this already a little, this is really all about handling data at speed and handling it in massive volumes. The key issue for developers in this field is making big data small as fast as possible. But it's only the conclusion of all of that filtering of big data that are going to get you to a point where you can say, here is an issue, this is the solution to it, or this is the set of circumstances that we ought to start managing. So it's volume and speed. There's no point in having an Internet of Things implementation if when your back door opens at 2 o'clock in the morning, you don't deal with it fast enough to stop the burglar or wherever the incident is. You know, it's got to be fast. You've got to deal with it now. If a sensor on a gate is saying something to you, then it needs to be processed now. It can't be processed in 10 minutes time, it'll be too late. Right. Now.
Right.
Well, the speed, when people are developing applications, this speed thing and the speed of not only the speed of receiving the data, the receiver's processing the data, and the speed of getting to a point where you know what you're going to do about it is fundamental.
IBM has made available to the developer community an offer with $12,000 of cloud credits. So if you want to grab that, then go to www.influentialvisions.com/cloud-dev-credits and you can pick that up. Let's get back into the show. Thanks. Yeah, so back to my next question, actually. I did talk a little bit about the KPMG statistic that I referenced earlier about the 84% of CEOs are sort of concerned about the quality of the data. Would you mind expanding a bit more around that, or do you think we've covered that?
No. I mean, we can talk on ad infinitum about this very issue because, you know, how does data arrive in the hands of a CEO or any member of the board requiring a decision? Well, it used to arrive on a printout next month. Even when it was a month old or when the actual occurrence was being reported a month later, CEOs were still pointing at it and saying, that can't be right. I don't believe that data. And then you'd be the next board meeting, you'd say, I was right and here's the issue. I wasn't right, and here's the right answer. What's happened, really, is that the data for analysis has become much, much, much larger than it ever was, and the belief of the receiver, the CEO, or any of the members of the senior management team, has become more inquisitive. Well, why is that, and how is that, and basically. The demand for fast data to arrive so I can make decisions has got to be balanced with making sure the data is right. And going back to what we said earlier, the veracity of the data is the key issue. Is this data right? Do I believe this data is right? By the way, the CEO can be wrong, and the data itself can be right, but the data has to be right when it's arriving. From bulk into a condensed form at speed, and you're telling someone to take some action, that information has to be right. Now, how many organizations, I ask myself, do I know? And I know a lot. What percentage of them are happy with that whole process? Which is, and to be frank, this is where the role of the developer comes in these days. It's producing systems from all of this data with all of these functions and all these analytics. It's producing answers for management teams, and it's producing support for the policies of management teams. How many people do I think that? This isn't a quote from anywhere, and I'm going to make it a very generous quote. How many people do I think have got that right? How many organizations do I think have got that right? A lot less than 50%. Yeah. So, and one of the problems is that even when you've got it right for today, things are going to change and it's got to be right again tomorrow and the day after and the day after that. So, you know, I think the senior management teams are right to be concerned. I think in many cases their fears will be offset by the fact that it can be proven with these deep mining analytic techniques that their hunch is wrong and that the data is right. But on the other hand, I think there are many organizations who just have not tackled this issue yet and can't possibly hope that they're right.
Yeah. It's certainly concerning that people aren't actually using as much data as they could. I mean, I think, you know, we're still, you know, when I first got into sort of social media and stuff like that, you know, over 5 years ago, I kind of understood that, you know, we were in this siloed world where data was all over the place and everything was siloed. But people are still talking about silos now. And I think actually the silos are probably even worse now. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, data in silos has always been a problem. I think what's happening these days is that people are approaching systems architecture in such a way that the data is coming out of silos, and it's being managed on a much more amalgamated basis. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that we're talking about, big data and analytics, is the thing that gives them the ability to lift it from its silos and manage it and handle it in a way that gets over that problem. But I think there are still many, even if the company's policy is not to have silos, there are many silos. You know, every time I think about a laptop or a desktop computer with a disk, I know there's a silo there. And it could be that there's some clever networking software that's actually unbundling those silos and bringing them into some kind of amalgamated place, an aggregated place. But the reality is that any organization that is driving itself using PCs is generating silos every minute of the day. So the question is, how do you manage it? And big data isn't only about data arriving from the outside or from IoT. It's about managing the big data that's there inside an organization, sometimes latent, sometimes hanging around on disk drives that haven't been touched for 10 years. And that data is really quite important. So, you know, I think the whole data management scene is one that has always demanded huge respect. The tools are available today to deal with all this data in a realistic and manageable way, but I don't really think that much more than half of the organizations in the world understand what the possibilities are yet for managing that data. And to back to your point of silos, I'll reiterate, I think there are silos all over the place, some of which are being mined and some of which are being ignored.
Yeah. I mean, I think we could certainly learn a lot from what I was. I mean, I went to the CDO summit. I think that was in 2014, and that was my first kind of real bit of information from people who are actually involved with some of this data. And it was actually quite impressive. There was someone from the New York government talking, and actually the CDO from New York. And actually that he was explaining that if you want to open a new coffee shop, for example, in New York, that the data analysis that they're using can actually assist you in opening the shop in the right location and choosing the right location based upon the times you want to be open, the times of the passing traffic, the locality based upon where your shop is located with regards to other shops, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, It's things like that that might be revolutionary, but are we doing it in most cases? Not really, because we're not joined up in many of our processes and the way that we think about these things. As far as I can gather, I mean, I don't know any cities in the UK that actually run their data like that. Do you?
I think there are good examples of that if we dig. You know, the footfall on Oxford Street in London is measured by the minute. So I do think there are great examples that we can probably discover mm-hmm. of all that kind of work happening. But to my mind, the conclusion of everything that we've been talking about here is that you need a great architecture, and the architecture needs to be adaptable. But fundamentally, you need a great architecture to start building the systems that will help you and your business deal with, cope with, benefit from, take advantage of all of this thing that we're calling big data and analytics, or in some people's eyes, big data analytics is one phrase. So get the architecture right, figure out what your tools are going to be, think about the data sources and making sure that the data that's coming in is being subjected to the veracity test. Get to a point where you are managing it in a rational and speedy way, and then get it delivered to to the people who need that information to make their decisions, and get it delivered online, real time, now. That's what developers are increasingly tackling by use of big data and all these tools, and it needs to be more and more the case. So I think from the point of view of the developer, these are hugely exciting times for that community or for that profession. And architecture, project management, tool selection, quality and delivery seem to me to be the key issues that need to be addressed.
Yes, I remember when we were talking about this the other day, actually, and you were saying that, you know, when you're choosing your vendor and software provider, that you need to work out, are they going to be here in a year, 2 years, 5 years down the line, or are they going to get bought out by someone and closed down or integrated into something else? I mean, I think that was quite an interesting point that you made there.
Well, I've been involved with startups in my career all along the track, not quite so much now, but and I'm very much one for supporting technology startups. But there is a big issue here for tool selection. If I arrive on the scene with an absolute whiz-bang set of functions in a new product, and I manage to convince the world that this is a great thing to do, but I go out of business next year, then that's no good to anyone, is it? So, you know, I think the big organizations are doing a great service in many respects by making acquisitions from the startups who are producing tools which complement their own, the big vendors' tools, and extend the reach and so on and so forth. But you do need, when you're selecting any system, and you know, cloud is probably more important than in this regard than anything ever was before. When you're selecting a new system, you need to make sure you're dealing with people who've got longevity and are likely to stand the course. Next 20 years, you don't really want to be implementing a new computer system every 5 years. So look at a 20-year or more than that horizon, and deal with people you know are going to be there, which may not be the latest whiz bang analytics tools. It may be that they've got great ideas and that they're using very modern technologies and so on. But the key issue here is continuity.
Right. So you also, I know we've talked quite a lot about the quality of data, but you do mention the value that is derived from not the amount of data, but actually the quality of data. Could you just expand a little bit more on that one for me, please?
Well, I think we've covered it really, Nat. The question is, if I'm a member of the board, I don't want lots of data on my desk. Data isn't what I want. I want answers. I want indications. I want warnings, and I want to know that in really short form. If I then say, well, prove it to me, then you might have to go and delve back into the data and show me how you got there. But I don't want to see lots of data. I want to see one-liners and two-liners saying, here are some issues, or here is this issue. What do you want to do about it? And here are some facts and figures to help you make your decision. So it really is about quality. It's about arriving at actionable insights. I don't know where that phrase was first came up, but somewhere in one of the descriptions of big data, big data is all about taking the whole of it and processing it rapidly down to actionable insights.
That makes a lot of sense, most definitely. So it's quite a bright place, really. I mean, when you look at the opportunities that exist to make the world a better place and to obviously, you know, grow revenues for businesses, we have a lot of good opportunities. In particular, I mean, when you look at the supply chain for just one example, and you think, you know, if we can actually cut down the amount of wasted food items, you know, I was actually talking a while back with Michael Tobin about this, and he was saying that it's sort of about 15% is what they are talking about saving in terms of actual food resource.
Yeah, I mean, analysis is key in the whole of this. Getting to a point where, if you go back in time, there was a thing called just-in-time manufacturing. It was delivering the components just in time to the production line to build the car or whatever it was. I was involved in the car industry at that time. Mm-hmm. And making sure that the pipeline for that the delivery of those components was as lean as possible. Therefore, not having lots and lots of components and sub systems stuck on your shelves in stock. So just in time, as now, you know, it's the same attitude as you were just mentioning, having the right thing in the right place at the right time in as lean a manner as possible is what this game's all about.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you, Mike. I've really, really appreciated your time. It's very interesting. I always seem to learn something. So I just want to remind everyone who's kindly listened in, we've been very lucky today. IBM has made available to the developer community $12,000 of cloud credits for free. And if you'd like to grab those, please visit influentialvisions.com/cloud-dev-credits, and then you can pick that up. Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.